Hi, this is Dr. Marielle McKinley. I'm with Janet Dipper for the Coach and the Counselor radio show. We have a great guest today, but first, a message from our sponsor.
The Gift of the Heart presents Andrew's Angels on the show you are listening to today. The Gift of the Heart is the proud sponsor of this show. Our mission: to donate a substantial portion of our net profits to children with cancer and families in need. While we understand the sadness of losing a loved one, organ donation can help save 8 lives. Our team, including Andrew's Angels on this show, embrace life, and together we want to inspire emotion, humility, humanity, and faith. Go to agiftoftheheart.com. Remember, that's agiftoftheheart.com. Books available are African Sunrise, Turn Your Heart On, and The Actor's Handbook. Or simply hit the donate button. Go immediately to agiftoftheheart.com during the show and show your support today. For a special gift with your order, type in the code Andrew's Angels. Agiftoftheheart.com. Go there now.
Thank you.
Well, yes, thank you. So we have a wonderful guest on today. I'm really excited. And his name is Bob Pass, and he's an internationally known author, radio and TV host. He's the voice of National Geographic. He's written this amazing book. He's a keynote speaker. Bob has done so many things, and he does it all. So I just want to say that, you know, his book, Communicating to Win in Life, Love, and Business, is so amazing. I read a little bit of it, and, you know, welcome to the show, Bob. We're so excited to have you on.
Thank you. Honored to be here. Thank you so much.
He was on the Steve Harvey show, too. And he's an actor and is in House of Cards. This man does it all. So, Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write the book and all your experiences.
Wow. We got a couple hours to do all that. I always say my mother would be so proud as that. As I hear these things, it's like, you know, I'm really a simple guy from the inner city of Baltimore. So, you know, the whole foundation is really living my life out loud to help others. I mean, that really kind of puts it all together right there. So what I've done is I've taken the greatest pain in my life and the mistakes that I've made in my life, and I've just written about them and I speak about them. And you know, the book is a transparent look at my life. So it's a story. It's really important for listeners to realize that it is a story. And I ask everybody to find themselves in my story. And it's about all the mistakes that I've made growing up, coming from a broken home. My father left when I was 10. I actually spent some time in foster care. My father was homeless for a period of time. You know, 2 failed marriages, 6 children. Success and failure in business. I've got a business marketing media background. You were kind enough to say a couple of things there. But it's really using all those experiences to help other people and for people to look and say, wow, you know, if he can do it, I can do it too. So that's really what it's about. It's a journey.
That's really what our show's about. It's about embracing your power. And what I loved what you said, that when you were on the Steve Harvey show, he asked you a question about the 3 most important things in your life. And I love the answer. You said family, faith, and failures. And we'll get with that in a minute. I've always said, like, if somebody asks me, what is your greatest strength? I always say my greatest strength is my weaknesses, because when I find them, they become my greatest strength. And you talked about, you know, becoming vulnerable and being authentic, and about Erickson's 8 stages of development, and some amazing things about the fact that we should be authentic with any failures, because it's how we react to them or take action, or are responsible, meaning the ability to respond. I've been through many, many traumas and tragedies and reinvented myself several times, and I can't be anything but authentic anymore. I love it. Feels more comfortable to me. You said to expose our pain to be able to grow. Can you help people understand exactly like how they might be able to do that?
Well, you know, one of the chapters in the book, Mario, is embracing your adversity. And so I don't really truly believe that there's anything bad that happens to us. You know, one of my favorite quotes is the Chinese proverb that says, there's great opportunity in pain. And I think what folks need to do, and I've done in the book, is to embrace, you know, almost look at it as a gift. It is an opportunity to stretch ourselves, to get out of that box, to look at life from a different perspective. So when Steve Harvey, and I have to tell you, I have to confess to be somewhat calculated, but I knew a little bit about his background as others do, but the whole idea of the failures, right? And so I knew that he would want to talk about the failures and to really get into that. And it's about getting knocked down 7 times and getting up 8. So if we take advantage of those opportunities to stretch and to grow and to be, and really to be an example for other people, I mean, it truly is a gift. And that's as hard as it's been. And let me clarify, the things I've gone through, you know, I've had 2 experiences with infidelity, and I've got 2 more books that I want to write. And one is about infidelity from a male perspective, because everybody assumes that it's the men who are always cheating. But guess who the men cheat with? I mean, come on, you know. I'm willing to live my life out loud to have other people say, "Wow, I thought I was the only one that happened to." And of course, we know that's not the case. But in isolation, we think that, don't we?
It's so beautiful. Yeah. Janet and I will say, like, she has great, great affirmations. In fact, she helped save my life. I had a couple of tragedies and a major surgery. And her life coaching helped me get back to how I was before that and then to grow, you know, and I'm growing. And one of the quotes that I would close with, and she has a similar quote, what you just said about, you know, you get knocked down 7 times, come back up 8. One of the quotes that I learned when I was very young and that that we've said in the past is Norman Vincent Peale. He says, take your greatest or something like your greatest adversity can be equal or greater opportunity. And that's the way I've chosen to live my life. And sometimes when life hits real, real hard from several directions, and you said that in your video, you said, you know, life hits us, and to be present in the moment. And I love your attitude. This is what our show is about, and we love people to go to the next level with vulnerability. And I understand also that, like with the infidelity, you didn't date for a couple of years. I did the same thing as a widow. I still haven't dated yet. But I'm ready to if there's any suitors. Laughter's best medicine for me also. But
there we go.
I've been through some traumas and things too, and I call her Wonder Woman because she has overcome hers amazing. So you're in the right place, and you have this message that it's just beautiful. Tell us a little bit more about your book or how you have overcome these tragedies.
Well, you know, the underlying theme, I think, in the book is really my faith. And I'll go back to a lunch meeting I had with one of my parish priests. And I said, Father Pete, you know, I'm the practicing Catholic, and I say practice because I'm still trying to get it right. But, you know, my faith has gotten me through the darkest times, the worst times of my life, when we think we either can't go on or we're all alone or whatever folks listening may be experiencing. I think, and it worked for me to have that higher power to know that you're not alone. So, and when I had this lunch meeting with this priest, I said, Father Pete, what does God want me to do with this? And he said, Bob, this is your ministry. And,
wow.
And it was profound. Yeah, really profound moment. I'll never forget it. And this is a man who ministers in the federal prison system. He's dedicated his life to helping, you know, incarcerated people. So it was, you know, here's the interesting thing, too, that I hope we have a fair amount of men listening, is I feel the responsibility, and I take it on greatly, that I wish more men would really feel comfortable speaking out, because I think a lot of men, there are a lot of women, I think, that follow and connect to my message, because typically speaking, you know, females tend to be more sensitive, more emotional, more communicative. I won't say exclusively, though. We talked about it. You touched on the dating thing. So it's been interesting. And not dating for 2 years and then being single now for 7 years, the great material I get and watching human interaction and all those things. But for the most part, men are not the more sensitive of the two sexes, right? And so what I'd like is for more men to really embrace that vulnerability. I love the word vulnerability. I love the word humility. And I think when we surrender to those things, good things can happen. You just say, I don't know, or boy, that hurt, or I didn't see that coming. You know, whatever it is, there's real strength and there's real power in that. And so I have six children. So I wrote the book and I think about my legacy. What's the legacy we want to leave? God had taken me yesterday. There's the book. And, you know, they're the six kids. So they could say my dad did his part in trying to facilitate more effective communication on all levels in life, in love, and in business. You know, I did a workshop on Friday for a digital marketing firm, so business related. But I started out by saying it's a 3-hour workshop for a group of millennials. And I love that. I love when that, you know, the folks come to you and say, help me, right? And everybody thinks the millennials are the best communicators. And that's another hour talk show for us to do, and it's great. But you know, I said to them, you're going to learn some things this morning that are not only going to help you professionally, they're going to help you personally. And wouldn't you know, I got a message from a guy within 2 hours who said, something you said struck a nerve. And he said, it wasn't what you said professionally, it was personally. I've been through a divorce, I'm in a relationship now, and I'm doing the same thing. Do you have any ideas? Because I tell people all the time, I'm here for you. Reach out to me. I'm accessible. I'm easy to find. You can Google me. You can go on the internet. You know, I'm out there because I do, as I said, live my life out loud and help other people. And that's what it's about when you do those things. It's not about flying in, flying out, giving a talk for an hour, which city am I in today, and then leaving. It's really about being part of the solution for me, really being part of the team.
I love that. We all have things, the problem and into the solution. So you're in line with everything we believe in. I'm sorry, Janet, go on.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was going to say, Bob, is that, you know, you're unique in that, you know, you make yourself available to other people, and that's the uniqueness that you have, and that you are approachable and accessible and people can reach out to you. You know, and as you're speaking, you know, I could feel that, you know, a real, caring, persona that you have, and it's wonderful because you are a very vulnerable person, and I think it's so wonderful that people get to know that about you. And I have a question to ask you. You know, you told us you have six kids. So how many of those kids are female, and how many are male?
So I have 4 boys and 2 girls. I had 4 children with my first wife, and then, you know, that marriage ended. One of my children attempted suicide 3 times, became severely depressed. So mental illness is a focus of mine. You know, I've watched the devastation that something like that can occur. So when I talk about going through some really awful things, there's nothing worse than that, in my opinion, is to watch one of your children suffer that way. So, and then I remarried, and then I had 2 more children, so a boy and a girl with my second marriage. You know, that ended now. It's been almost 8 years. So, but you know, Janet, thank you. I want to touch on that. If there's one thing I want to convey about myself, it is that accessibility and that vulnerability, and that I've yet to find anybody say that. People are actually amazed. They say, "Is it really you? You know, did I get you?" It's like, I don't have a group of people that do this. It really is me. And you know, I never want to get to that point, whatever that point would be, you know, so that you're not accessible. That, I think that is, Janet, you touched on it. I think it is what, I hope it is, one of the things that makes me unique is that I'm relatable. I remember having a meeting with a guy who said, "Hey, can we get together? I'd love to work with you." And he said, and I love this word, and it's a word that we don't hear very often, hardly ever. It's a great word. The word is vitality. He said, "Bob, there's a vitality about you and your mission," right? And that's such, and I was like, and I remember saying, "Rob, wow, I love that word." And so as we think about words that we would like people to use to describe us or how they see us, That's a really good one for me, vitality, because what is, you know, it conveys, you know what it means, but there's an energy and a strength to it. And I want people to know it's okay. It's okay to cry. And, you know, I jokingly say real men wear pink, real men communicate to win, real men cry, real men get their feelings hurt. You know,
I love
all
that.
Of these, right? All of these things.
You say that, Bob, and I have a question for you. This is something that I don't watch TV, but when I have watched TV, some of the shows that I've seen really bothers me because they portray men in such a negative way, you know. I love the fact that you touch on all this because, you know, real men do these things, you know, and it's okay. It's normal.
That's right.
For real women.
No, it
do,
is.
You know, with the feminist movement, a lot of women don't think it's okay to cry or, you know.
Right.
I love that you said in that one video that when we expose our pain, we are empowering ourselves for growth. And
that's right.
As somebody that, has been through, everybody's been through a lot of challenges. I've been through ordinary traumas and tragedies it's amazing, like you said, the word vitality, because when we do embrace our pain and not try to pretend like it's not there or put on a good front, like I don't put it all over Facebook or anything like that, but I am, like even on the show, I've talked about some of the things I've experienced, so has Janet, because being authentic, it seems to be extremely important in today's world with fake news and everybody looking perfect on social media, and our youngsters today, you know, if they don't get enough likes or this or that, some people actually commit suicide over that kind of thing. I've been hacked a lot of times, and it used to really upset me. And then I studied the psychology behind it, and I realized it's just an addiction, and it's like a rape of power and control, and I don't react anymore. And a lot of it has stopped. I just choose to move forward. I went through a lot with the surgery and different traumas that I'm embracing now, and it helps. It helps to face those, embrace them, and move forward. When I squash those, it somatizes in the body. It can even create cancer. So Janet's been a great help with me of rerouting my neural pathways as a default system to think more positively. I was always a positive thinker until a lot of this stuff hit me. All at once, my husband died, my father died, two best friends died, I lost my house, and I had major health problems. I didn't think I'd even be alive this long. So I'm so grateful for people like you and for Janet and the people that we have on our show. They do go to this level, and it's so refreshing. So a lot of people, when you're on a show, and you did this on Steve Harvey, you know, you opened up on his show, and if anybody you can open up to, it would be him because of his past. He was homeless and all that. Now he's huge, a huge, amazing, loving public figure with what's going on in the news and all. Everybody thinks they have to be perfect, and there is no perfection. There's beauty. There's beauty in talking about the things we've been through so that we can maybe save one person's life, like the young man that you spoke to. This digital era is wonderful, but also can be misleading. So it is so refreshing to have a man, especially, willing to talk about these types of things. Janet, why don't
you
take over?
I think you wanted to say something, didn't you, Bob?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say, Mariel, talking about that is, and I tell people this, as well. The struggles are real, you know, and I write the platitudes and I read the platitudes. One thing I will tell you is, and I'd love to talk a little bit about this because I'll give a lot of talks and I'll say, people will say, who do you follow? Who do you read? Who inspires you? You know, who motivates the motivator? Who coaches the coach? So Janet, this will strike near and dear to you, I know, as a coach, but I do tell people the struggles are real.
Interrupt you, but we call her the doctor to the doctor. But go on.
See that? No. So you get it. So you'll understand it. So what I tell people is, you know, to tell someone to put your big girl panties on or put your boots on or dust yourself off, it sounds
right.
Great. It's not that easy. I mean, this, pardon my expression, this shit hurts and it's hard. And so that's the whole thing that, you know, for folks who may be out there listening to this, thinking like, wow, you know, yesterday was going to be their last day or I can't do it anymore. Folks, we know it hurts. I mean, these things are real. We all have different, you know, breaking points and tolerance levels and all of these things. I mean, I've had some of those knockdown, drag out, F-bomb discussions with God. You know, it's like, enough's enough. You know, do I really need to experience infidelity twice before I get it? Do I really need to catch my father in the arms of my mother's best friend at 10 years old to get it? Right.
Yeah.
And so enough is enough, but it's what you do with that. And people look at me, listen, I know they see gray hair and they see blue eyes and they see, you know, a great smile. By the way, they are really my teeth, no dental work whatsoever. I'm very proud of that. Let me slide that in there. You know, but you know, beyond that is real struggle. And so when they hear this story about, you know, having grown up in the inner city of Baltimore and attended a high school that was, you know, growing up in the riding of the 60s in Baltimore and going to a school that was 70% black and being a minority in that environment, living through that. So I want people to know that I understand the struggles are very real. They're very, very real. And also what you have to do, in my opinion, I'm 57 years old. I'm very grounded. And I was telling the story on Friday, that 12-year-old boy whose first job was setting up bowling pins in the basement of a church for $3 a night. So I'm very rooted and very grounded in who that kid is, regardless of any worldly successes or failures, opportunities or anything that's come my way. I feel very blessed. You both know the expression, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And I think, of course, we know what the crown is. It's responsibility, isn't it? It's to whom much is given, much is expected.
You said, Bob, I apologize. I'm a little bit hard of hearing. I want to hear that expression. I didn't hear it.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown?
That what?
Heavy is the head that wears the crown. And so, in other words, what that means is...
Is the head that wears the crown. I've never heard it. What does it mean? It means like...
Wearing the crown, there's a lot of responsibility, isn't there? So if you think about it in that perspective as a leader, as a ruler, as whatever, heavy is the head that wears the crown. We all wear a crown because it's a crown of responsibility. It's a crown of obligation. Heavy is the head that wears that.
I know you work on House of Cards. We're not about cutting people down or anything on this show. But is there some kind of communication tip you can give? They're just reading that now they're requiring, businesses, especially in show business and, you know, all businesses, about all this sexual dread Kevin Spacey's career. I don't follow that stuff too closely. We try not to do opinions on the show. However, it's a very real thing going on. And a lot of women are coming forward, and some men. Is there some type of tips that you can give to human beings that may be afraid to come forward about something? I know also that they're asking coaches and consultants, which you are both, and so are we, to develop sexual training for prevention of any type of sexual harassment in the workplace. And I read one story this morning that said that those trainings don't work. A woman that wrote her thesis on it, that they need to be more in depth. Have anything to say at all about helping somebody come forward or somebody that may be falsely accused? Because your communications
let me add this to the list of experiences. I don't think I talk about it in the book, and it'll come out at some point in my life, and there may be somebody out there listening to it who runs with it. I had an experience as a 16-year-old boy. A Catholic priest attempted to molest me, and you could argue that he did molest me because his hands were on me and they shouldn't have been. So I escaped. You know, there was no harm, there was no rape, there was no, you know, anything that egregious, but the fact is that this person's hands were on me and shouldn't have been on me. So I can relate to that in some way, certainly not to the level that a lot of people can. I know there's a lot of embarrassment, a lot of humility. I never told my parents, and I never told any authority figure And I don't, in part because I was 16, you know, it's embarrassing to use words and to describe acts, as we know.
Yeah,
I mean, we get to vote. Right.
There was no Oprah Winfrey out Billy educating people at all. I had similar things happen to me when I was, 14 and 15. I didn't even know what it was or that it was,
correct.
You could say no or that it was wrong. And people say, oh, you can prosecute these guys that were over 18. I was gang raped after I was raped by a Sparklets man 3 weeks later. And people said, oh, you should bring these people to court. I said, they probably have families now, and they didn't know either that was wrong back then, at least being over 18. You know, I've done my forgiveness work on that, but that's just me. You know, that's just me. So, anyway.
Well, you know, there's a stigma tied to the whole thing, right? The embarrassment or all of that stuff like that. And then, you know, we could devote a whole show on the whole topic of sex and sexual predators and all that, and the power and the control. And that's where, you know, it's interesting because I know that Weinstein and Spacey are off and being treated for sexual addiction, but the American Psychiatric Association doesn't recognize sex addiction as a real, it's not a diagnosable problem, I think, to use the terms correctly.
And maybe they changed it in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. I know it was in the DSM-4 revised. I guess maybe they don't want to, because it is an illness, sexual addiction, and it is treatable. However, you know, like the people that are like major sex offenders and all that go to prison, some of those people, you know, just can't. They've gone too far with it. But like I said, the king, the person that wears the crown, holds the responsibility. I did like that Kevin Spacey apologized and said he didn't remember, but I have not really followed that. And we did do a show on this with Kathy Pickard, who actually changed case law precedent. So as far as you also worked with National Geographic on a lighter note. You said that's one of the most amazing things that you did in your life. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, a lot of these things, I have to tell you, I sort of fell into. I mean, I went to college to be a news anchor, and so I loved the media, and I loved that work. And I gave up the dream, of pursuing that when I got married the first time. I was very young. I was 2 months shy of my 23rd birthday when I got married. I had my first child at 25, my second at 26. And now I look at some of my kids. I have two in their 30s, two in their 20s, and two in their teens. And I can't imagine you know, the ones, particularly in their teens. I have a son who's 23 and a daughter who's 25. You know, and at that age, I was a father, and at the age of my 23-year-old son, I was married. And I can't even begin to imagine them, you know, being married. So anyway, to your question about the National Geographic, when the second marriage ended, that was really my opportunity to say, okay, I'm 50 years old, now it's my turn. And what I mean by that, because I don't have a selfish bone in my body, what I meant by that is I used to say I dumbed it down in those relationships and that I became complacent. And so I stopped really thinking about what was important to me and what mattered to me. And I decided at that point that I was going to pursue that. So I was on CBS Radio, and then I went to Fox News when they expanded that show. And then I started getting calls. Hey, can you come in? That's how I got the House of Cards role. They said, can you come in and audition for this? And the National Geographic thing came calling. And so that was, boy, when you see the video and your voice is over a National Geographic video, from my perspective, life doesn't get any better. Because as the eagle swoops down and grabs the salmon out of the lake, and your voice is narrating that, you just want to cry.
That's exciting. Well, you have a fabulous
voice. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's very exciting.
Voice,
and not
fabulous presence. Yeah. You are so magnetic and just such a great story. About communication tips, I know that you said in that one video to do some writing. Let's say, like, in today's world, dealing with people possibly that might not have the same contract law requirements that we have in our country or even in the state of California. Do you recommend that that people put things in writing for better communication skills. I started doing that with my 88-year-old mother. She's hard of hearing, and she hears dyslexically. I started writing things down, and then she can refer to it later and look at it. And I thought this would probably be better than just having phone calls for business. Sometimes
right.
people misunderstand something, and then like a
right.
contract becomes void somehow. So what would you recommend for communication issues within a business and with other people that we're interacting with?
Well, great question, and this came up on Friday at the workshop too. One of the two things that I think we want the listeners to take away from this, at least these two, is the most important person you communicate with is yourself. So know yourself, know how you feel, know what you want, be able to articulate those things, process them through. So again, remember that the most important person you communicate with is yourself. And in large part, I wrote the book because no one teaches us how to communicate. They teach us social skills if we're lucky. It's very different.
Oh,
so we,
so
right?
True.
So we, yeah. So, so we find ourselves in problem situations, professionally or personally, and we don't know how to navigate out of them because nobody taught us how to navigate out of them. Number one. Number two, to answer your question more specifically, is I tell people all the time, always ask someone, what's the best way to communicate with you? It goes back to the humility piece. You know, just throw the gauntlet down and say, listen, what's the best way to communicate? I'm a big texter, by the way. I prefer a conversation.
Oh,
I am too. I prefer a conversation, but texting is a great tool. It's not meant to be a crutch. We have, you know, it really bothers me that we rely so much on technology that we have lost the art of real communication. It really bothers me, and I don't like the way the pendulum is going. You know,
we've lost that art.
We're not connected anymore. We've lost the ability to connect.
You know, that is so true, Bob. Bob, I have one thing that I have to say is that, you know, I have a lot of friends, myself including, who, we're in the dating scene or are dating or we're, you know, are not
yep.
dating anymore, but they've all said to me, you know, some of them have been my clients, that, you know what, it really bothers me that a person doesn't want to take the time out to call me. You know, they think that it's okay just to text all the time. How can you create a bond with somebody? How can you really get to know that person if you're just texting? You can't convey emotion over text.
Can't.
You know, you can't, there's only so much you can convey, you know, and it's sad because you are right.
But what he said was that to ask people what's the best way for them to communicate. Like, I communicate best when I'm reading something. You are expressing that you communicate best, especially if you're dating or bonding with somebody on a dating level. Of course, people should be talking on the phone. I'm talking about in business and things. I like
that's
written things. Everybody has a different learning style. So what
Bob,
what you said is really important. It's not just about authenticity. It's about understanding other people's learning styles. Some people learn better from watching a video. So that is a great piece of advice. And what Janet, you said, is extremely important for dating and relationships. Definitely, like if they could even Skype or if you see in their eyes. Because even over the phone, some people need to see somebody's eyes. So there's the dating thing. There's the business thing. And that's a really good question because, most women are going to want to talk to somebody, you know, that they're dating. They're going to want to have a conversation. With the kids nowadays, or not kids, but younger adults, they seriously really do only text or communicate that way. I have a 30-year-old son, and I'm like, son, you know, did you get my call? No. Me and all my friends, we text. I said, well, I'm your mother, and we're going to talk. And he respects that,
right.
And I say it in a way where we can learn to set boundaries. Can you give a tip on how to set boundaries without offending somebody? And I think perhaps that's the first step is to ask somebody, what's the best way to communicate with you? And then if it's business, it could be some people only want to do email. So can you give some tips what the next step would be for communicating with somebody once you find their learning style? And if your learning style is different, how do you set the boundaries without offending somebody?
Well, I think the most important thing we need to do, and I'm gonna introduce something here that might shock you. You made a comment about most women. You didn't say all. Thank you for doing that, because the generalities, you know, it's like all men like to sit on the couch, drink beer, and watch football. Not true. All women are bitches, pardon the expression, not true. So let me just throw those two out there, generally speaking. What I found in my dating life over the last 8 years, I'm amazed at how many women are not the communicators that they either think they are or the world thinks they are. You know, I'm amazed at how many times if I meet someone, I've done the online thing, I've written about it, I've spoken about it, I've done it on my Fox show, because I don't think you can really talk about anything unless you've experienced it. Just my opinion. You know, how can I be an authority on anything? If I haven't done it, how do I know what it's like? If I haven't walked in those shoes, how do I know what it's like? And then all I can talk about are my personal experiences. But I've had connections with people who have said, I don't like to have a conversation. Believe it or not, women. You know, I don't want to talk on the phone. You know, let's meet for coffee. And then my response is, no, we're not going to do that. So I think what you need to do, Marianne, to answer your question is you need to, first of all, keep it about you. Keep it about yourself in terms of, you know, I do some work with medical students and residents and faculty. I do some work here at Johns Hopkins. We've got the University of Maryland. So I'm helping, you guys are going to be happy to know this, I'm helping the next generation of doctors with their communication skills. And it's very rewarding
too, but that's
well, it's very rewarding work. But I think one of the things that we teach people is, again, always talk in terms of how something makes you feel. And one of the significant reasons is nobody can invalidate your feelings, right? If I feel something makes me feel a certain way and I articulate that, hey, when you say this, I feel neglected, I feel ignored, I feel insignificant. Nobody can validate that. It's when we become defensive with the other person. So in terms of communication, I think the first thing you say, and here's a conversation with your 30-year-old son, and I've got a 32-year-old son and a 31-year-old son. So you say, and it's funny you're talking about this. I sent my son a text last Friday, hadn't heard back from him. So Monday, now it's going to be a week tomorrow, Monday I sent him a follow-up text and I said, does it really take 3 days to respond to me? And he shot back right away. We're extremely close, extremely close. When his mother and I divorced, he came to live with me at the age of 12. And so he said, I'm sorry, Dad, I'll call you in a little bit, you know, kind of the thing. But, you know, calling him out in a nice way. But I always say, you know, what's the best way to communicate with you? And then for you really to express your preference. People are amazed at me. You know, as a 57-year-old, that I like to text. And I think they're also amazed that millennials, I had a room full of them on Friday, that millennials are not very good communicators. They're not. Everybody thinks they're texting and they're this and that. Yeah, but they – and here's what happens with text. People read them with the intention, and I think it's good intention, to follow up later. Guess what happens with later, folks? We get busy and later – later never comes.
Yeah.
Right? Later never comes. Right.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of a text
is
to respond immediately.
I'd like to apologize to hundreds of people that have private messaged me on Facebook, and I'm just now getting to some of them. I get hundreds of messages a day, and some were really great offers, and they were like in August. I can't possibly read all those and get back to everyone. I'm trying, but I don't know how other people do it. So I want to apologize to anybody that may feel offended that I was not able to get back with them that sent me some really great messages. I it's overwhelming for me. How would you recommend to speak with somebody, let's say, if you say, I understand what you're saying about keeping it about yourself. That's like assertiveness training where you say, I feel, not you make me feel. You know, not
right.
to get defensive. If
correct,
the person, say, I'll use another example. Let's say you're doing business and you're speaking with somebody on the phone because that's how you communicate with that person. And then when you repeat things in writing that have been said, or you're negotiating something, and they don't want to respond in writing, and then a business deal goes sideways, what would you recommend to do? Because this has happened with a couple people, and some people don't get very threatened by any type of boundary. They'll think it's not spiritual, or it's not, you know, positive or whatever, and it's, you know, it's like walking on eggshells. So what would you recommend if it's maybe have an intermediary on those calls, that things that were promised and said would be heard by somebody else, or what?
Well, that's one approach. I mean, I think what you need to do, so if you're so let me make sure I'm hearing you correctly. You've had a conversation with someone, you followed up in writing, and then at that point they're not getting back to you. So they've kind of gone dark at that point. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
I'm talking about 8 months of conversations, and then doing things in writing to reiterate. I don't even know if they read them. Maybe they have hundreds of messages coming in too. I did go to law school. I remember conversations verbatim, which may be a hindrance. they might say they just don't. They only want to talk on the phone. And it's at the point where, you know, possibly things need to be in writing, and I don't want to offend somebody by setting that boundary. It does happen with some people in the spiritual genre. I've been in the spiritual genre writing for magazines for over 20 years, and I've had that happen a few times. Some people do really walk that walk, and I could trust anything that they said. I might not even ask for money, and they would just send me money for helping them with something. That's real rare, though. I'm talking about somebody that's like a world-renowned best-selling author, people that have really great credibility. I'm just having a difficulty, I guess, with having technology and old-school conversations and trying to get more professional, I guess, if you will. On promises I've made to them based on certain people's promises and conversations over the phone.
Well, you also got to realize at what point do you walk away? I mean, at what time do you realize that that relationship is not the kind of relationship that you want to? I think it's all about setting boundaries. I mean, this is one of the things that, given the business and background that I have, I mean, I think it's really about valuing yourself, setting the boundaries. We teach people how to treat us, don't we? I mean, you've heard that before in terms of what we're willing to tolerate and accept. And so I think you need to I told the group on Friday when I spoke, I said several of the happiest moments of my life as a business guy was firing clients. And then I went through the story, you know, and told them the story about firing somebody because we got to the point, and maybe you've gotten to a point, I'm hearing the progress and I can see it, but you've gotten to a point where there's sort of a roadblock or a fork in the road or whatever, it's a breakdown. And I've said to people, we've reached a point in our relationship where I can't provide the things for you that you need. And I remember this guy looking at me, this is when I had built my insurance agency, and he said to me, "You're firing me?" And he said, there's a little indignance in his voice, but I said, no. I said, I'm not firing you. I said, we've reached the point that I can no longer give you what you need. And of course I was firing him, but that was truthful. I was exhausted and was like, I can't give you what you need. And I no longer value the relationship. I'm not motivated by money. So it wasn't like I'm going to put up with your abuse,
right,
for money or whatever, you know, and abuse is fine differently. Again, we all different thresholds, right?
I want to, in case that person's listening to the show, I'm not firing anybody, and I don't want to change a relationship except for to make it where I need to set a boundary, I guess, where I'm growing, and we're growing, and our business is growing, and that we need to operate on a certain more professional level of business, and perhaps
this
is for you or something, and be really positive about it. Because I do
and that is positive. That is positive.
They're really important to me.
Yeah. You know, how do we, I'm feeling invalidated. I'm feeling ignored. I'm not feeling heard. I'm, you know, whatever. And so where are we? What's going on? And then, you know, you put it back on the person, let them articulate that. So, you know, that stuff's really powerful, but it's also frustrating to be stonewalled and shut down and ignored and all the other pieces of it.
So much ignored.
Yep, absolutely.
Like
yeah.
But I really appreciate what you've offered to us. It's really great. And I just realized a lot of times when we do business with people that are friends first, they don't
yep.
understand the person's in business mode. So it is
right.
about setting boundaries. Anyway, we're almost running out of time, but this has been so wonderful. Please go to Bob's page at www.bobpath, that's capital P, or just a P like Paul, A like Apple. And he's got a blog, and he's got great videos. He's been on, he had a show with CBS, a radio show, and he's got that great book that he has out, and he's just very approachable, and he's also an actor and National Geographic. This man does it all. He also consults. He speaks at Fortune 500 companies, and he will answer a email or a text or a call from somebody from one of those. Yes, he's very approachable and full of wisdom, life experience. And, Janet, do you – oh, and I wanted to say one thing that I learned from you today that I kind of remembered. You'd mentioned about surrendering to our vulnerability, and it reminded me of a quote, surrender to win, you know, like letting go, letting God. And
yeah.
and it's kind of an oxymoron, but it is actually a beautiful process with the heart when we can not think with just our heads, but feel in our hearts and surrender whatever is bothering us and give it to God or your higher power or to somebody, whatever your, you know, path is, and surrender
yep.
to win rather than fighting that and suppressing it. And that might mean writing. It might mean having a conversation, you know, whatever the person that works for the person, or seeking out help. And Janet and I do offer full help. We offer it as a team, and we specialize in relationships, addictions, corporate types of coaching. Janet, you want to take over and give my email or my website is Dr. Dr. Mariel, Mariel McKinley, McKinley.com. And you can find me on Facebook, and Janet's got everything, Janet Zipper, all in order. You can find her everywhere. Janet, take it away.
Yes, we have to close that with a positive affirmation as usual. And I really enjoy Dr. Joyce Brothers, and I found an affirmation that she has, and I think it's so great. The affirmation is, success is a state of mind. If you want success, start thinking of yourself as a success. So simple but powerful. So thank you so much, Bob, for being on the show. I appreciate it. And, you know, everyone go out to Amazon.com. You'll find his book there. And please, you know, look him up. And he's just an amazing person. Thank you again, Bob, for being on the show. Appreciate you.
Oh, Bob, we always tell
Janet Mariel, thanks for having me.
We tell people we love them in case they haven't heard that they're loved today. If you want to join us, it's kind of a tradition that we do. So if you haven't been told you're loved today, we do love you.
We love you.
Guys.
Yes.
We love you.
Yes, we love you. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much. And our look forward to December 16th. We're doing a Christmas miracle special, and that will be Saturday, 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 10 o'clock at night in England and on that side of the world, and we will be promoting that soon. So God bless you all. We love you. Thank you, Janet. Thank
you, Bob. Good night,
everyone.
Good night.
Thank you,
Bob. Good night. Thank you.
Okay.
You're
good night.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.